Case number 09-5179, Butte County, California, Appellant versus Philip Inhojan, Chairman, National Indian Gaming Commission et al. Mr. Whittlesey for the appellant, Mr. Stockman for the appellee's Philip Inhojan et al., and Mr. Yost for appellee Mekahupta Indian Tribe of Chica Ranchera.
Good morning.
May it please the court. My name is Dennis Whittlesey. I'm with the law firm of Dickinson Wright, and with me is my associate, Sarah Harris. This case really questions on our part whether the Mekahupta tribe is a tribe with continuous tribal existence from the 1851 treaty to 1939 when the land was taken into trust, having a historic connection to the land now at issue in this litigation, and that land must have had significant relation to the tribe throughout its history. That's articulated by the courts. It's the policy written by the National Indian Gaming Commission. It was articulated in the Coleman land.
Do you have any dispute with the multi-factor test set forth in the Coleman memo?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Do you have any dispute with the multi-factor test set forth in the Coleman memo?
Not at all.
Okay, so yours is, it's all about whether they accurately applied it here.
That's correct,
okay.
Your Honor.
Okay.
And our dispute is with the fact that at a time prior to the agency decisions at hand, even though 3 years after the Coleman land determination was written, when the county was unaware that that was even being processed, the agencies in the case of the NIGC not only disregarded the Beckham report, ignored it to the point that it was not even part of the NIGC's administrative record. The Department of the Interior.
As I understand, you're challenging two agency actions.
Correct.
Here, right? What does the Coleman memo have to do with the decision to amend the gaming ordinance? Why is that?
Each of these decisions, Judge Griffith, required a determination that this land was restored to a restored tribe so that it could be used for gaming. In the case of the NIGC.
For the amendment of the gaming ordinance, was that necessary?
That's correct. And the amended gaming ordinance was site specific, for gaming on this site. And the determination in Coleman's land opinion was this is a restored tribe.
So the point is they wouldn't have been able to amend the gaming ordinance if the site had not been eligible. It hadn't been restored lands.
That's correct.
Okay.
And the question is whether it is restored land to this tribe. Now, our argument is, and we think the AR supports this, there's nothing in the AR that connects this tribe to the historic tribe any time.
What do you mean by AR?
I'm sorry?
What's an AR?
Administrative record, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Don't use acronyms.
And the critical parts of which are before in the joint appendix. But they're in the briefs that had been filed on the other side do not cite a single fact of tribal existence, of tribal federal interaction on a government-to-government basis subsequent to the Treaty of 1851 until the land was taken into trust in 1939. Now, there are
You've really kind of mixed a whole bunch of things up there, haven't you? The land was taken into trust in 1939.
Right.
What land?
All right, let me back up a little bit, Your Honor.
Not the land we're dealing with here.
The land that the tribe occupied as a federal rancheria, as trust land, formerly was a large part of the ranch of Don and Annie.
This is the 20-some acres, right? The 20-some acres.
Right. Was within the rancheria, and that was part of the land of John and Annie Bidwell.
Right.
So that the Bidwell Ranch, which was the residence for these people, as a condition of their employment by the Bidwells working on the ranch. The Bidwells hired them, they selected them, and as the record shows, they even set a code of conduct for them. That land was deeded to a Presbyterian church and in turn deeded to the United States to be taken into trust for the Indians of the Machupta village. That's the residential, that's the reservation land. That's the Rancheria land.
That's not a reservation. Casino. Not a reservation.
I'm sorry?
A misnomer. It's not a reservation.
That's correct, because it was alienated after termination.
Well, it wasn't reserved from the public lands. That's what a reservation is, when the federal government takes its land and reserves it from the public domain. But it seems to me there are a couple propositions here that I'd like to just hear from you on. One is that, as I read the Coleman letter, the Gaming Commission itself says there has to be a connection between the land, the so-called restored land, and the restoration of tribal status. Now, it doesn't have to be simultaneous, but there has to be a connection.
But
is it your position there is no connection?
No, Your Honor. Let me explain. The gaming parcel is 15 miles away from what was the Rancheria land. And there has to be a historic connection between this tribe and the gaming
parcel.
I understand that.
But the way that the statute is written, it seems to me, and it seems to me the Gaming Commission said this itself, is there has to be a connection between restoration of tribal status and restoration of land. And there's no such connection here that I see.
That's not my argument. Yeah. My argument is that the tribe, when it was restored in 1992, did move to acquire this land, and probably in a timely fashion. We're not contesting that issue.
They didn't acquire it until 2001.
The new land, though.
They didn't acquire it until 2001. That's 9 years later.
I think the NIGC has been somewhat lenient in that regard. I do think it was a long time. However, that's not our complaint in this instance. Our complaint is that the Secretary is free to take land into trust for the tribe under the Indian Reorganization Act. But if the Secretary is going to take the land into trust for the tribe for gaming, it must meet the stricter standards for trust acquisition under the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act. Now, this land...
That's what the Coleman letter says.
Coleman, I think the problem, Your Honor, is Coleman took a historic tribe that had a treaty, and as the government has stated in its brief, because there was never a congressional termination of that tribe, this tribe is that tribe. Now, that's really what the Coleman opinion says, and that's what the briefs in this case.
Well, there was a congressional termination.
I'm sorry?
There was a termination of this.
Well, there was a termination of the reservation tribe that was recognized in 1939 with the acquisition of the land, taking the land into trust by the federal government. So the Rancheria tribe did have federal recognition by virtue of the government-to-government relationship established in 1939. Coleman contends that the tribe was recognized continuously by virtue of the 1851 treaty, even though there is no evidence of interaction until 1939 between the tribe and the federal government. And indeed, as the Beckham report documented, ignored by the NIGC certainly, documented government documents, and this is what Beckham worked from, throughout the 19th century reported the absence of a tribe.
When was the county first notified that the tribe wanted to acquire or would be acquiring or had acquired this 600 some acre plot for the purpose of gaming?
The county knew, I'm going to say as early as perhaps 2000, 2001, 2002, somewhere in there. And one of the supervisors, a politician, did write a letter endorsing the project. So the county knew there was a proposed project, but that's all it knew. The county did not know that there was a review of the land underway for restored status.
A couple things, factual things. There's an indication that initially the tribe was rebuffed by the Gaming Commission. Where can we find in the joint appendix the initial decision rejecting this as restored lands?
The initial determination which we sought and even filed a motion to compel that it be added to the AR concerned land in Placer County to the south. That's the county, by the way, of the Roseville decision. And the NIGC advised the tribe at that time that the parcel in Placer County would not be eligible as restored land to the tribe. And so the tribe set out to find another piece of property.
Well,
the commission did reject.
What was the reason for that?
But they would not give us any of those files. Well, they would not give us that.
You don't
opinion.
Know the basis for the initial decision?
We don't, because it was not made part of the AR, and Judge Kennedy denied our motion to have the AR. Actually, it went to a magistrate. We wanted to have the AR supplemented with that material, and that material was denied us.
Okay, even though the Coleman report refers to it.
The Coleman report referred to it. Yeah. I knew about it as an Indian
okay,
lawyer.
Okay, so we go to 2001. I just want to get the sequence here. Right, and the tribe acquires the land in 2001. Where's the tribe get the money for this? Do we know that?
The customary procedure, and I assume it was followed in this case, is the tribe has developers who actually pay the costs of the acquisition and pay the costs of securing the project. And actually, I do know this because there is a limited liability corporation, and the developer is Station Casinos of Las Vegas.
Okay, so 2001, they get the land. Then they apply for this to this thing that you can take it into trust, which sounds like a gimmick to me. I mean, but anyway, apparently it's done. It's not until 2008 that the Department of Interior gives notice of an intention to take this into trust. Right. So there's a seven. What's going on in that 7 years? Besides your filing with them saying, hey, there's evidence we have that you haven't considered.
I think part of what went on, Your Honor, is that they as part of the trust application, the tribe and Station Casinos had to prepare an environmental impact statement. Yeah. And we did prepare comments to the environmental impact statement in which we attempted to cite the Beckham report. And in the responses to the comments, the Department of the Interior said, well, we're not going to revisit, and these are their words, not mine, we're not going to revisit the land of the status of this tribe because it was recognized in 1951 by an act of treaty and 1851 by an act by a treaty, and there was never a congressional termination of its tribal status. Well, a lot of tribes are extinct, including probably all of the other tribes that were signatory to the same treaty as the Machupta Village Band. A lot of tribes cease existing, which is one of the reasons that restored land, the test articulated in Grand Traverse and Coos, again, all the NIGC opinions, Coleman's opinion is, was there continuous tribal existence? And the answer is, there's no evidence that there is, and indeed, Beckham supplied evidence that there was not. Now, the NIGC ignored the Beckham report, excluded it from its administrative record. The Department of the Interior included it, but nowhere did the Department of the Interior discuss the Beckham report or explain why it was,
as my final factual question, or at least for the moment anyway, is has the land been taken into trust?
It has not been because of this appeal.
Okay.
Now, what I would...
We're here on arbitrary and capricious review, right? I mean, it's not our job to decide whether the Beckham report is better than the Coleman report. It's our job to decide whether it was arbitrary and capricious that they chose the Coleman report and its conclusions over the Beckham report, right?
That's correct.
And so we need to look to see if there's any substantial evidence that supports determination that these are restoration lands, correct?
And that's our case, Your Honor, that the Coleman report, indeed the record before her from the tribe, was silent with regard to any tribal existence or any interaction between the tribe and the federal government from 1851 forward.
Let me just be clear. I didn't know that interaction with the federal government was necessary. They had the 1851 treaty. And you mean they necessarily could not continue as a tribe unless they had further interactions with the federal government?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I can't hear.
I said I wasn't aware that the interaction with the federal government was a requirement here where you have the 1851 treaty. And are you suggesting that there had to be further interactions for the department to find that there was a tribal existence?
No, Your Honor. What I'm saying is, first, there was none. But secondly, and this is the second part of what I was going to say,
but
there's nothing.
So what is what I'm trying to
well,
understand.
Well, there is a all so right. What. But the corollary to that is, within the statements of fact, within the Coleman report, within the record that from which she worked, there's no evidence of any tribal activity as a tribe, as a group.
What do you think that would mean?
That can be found any number of ways. It can be found in lots of contemporaneous reports. Now, that's important because if there was no tribe in existence, no tribal entity, then there was no
history. How do they act as a tribe? What do you mean?
The interaction with the federal government is important because the federal government officials wrote reports throughout the 19th century saying there are these people out here, they're from a lot of places, and there is no indicia of tribe. It's just a bunch of people living on the ridge.
What would be an indicia of tribe?
All right, that's easy. And we, in fact, outline that in our reply brief. One is that...
what you outline are things that may be necessary, but are they not necessary, but could show tribal existence. But in the absence of those, is there no way for the department to find tribal existence? That's all I'm getting at.
Well, there are standards for tribal existence that are measured by the Department of the Interior in assessing whether other tribes with treaties that lost their recognition. Well, I think the critical three, and they're mentioned at page 36 of our reply brief, are actually in the regulations of the department. And it's part 83 of 25 CFR, which determines the administrative process for deciding whether a tribe exists at a tribe. And I think critical first is that the tribe must show it has been continuously identified as an American Indian entity since 1900. Well, there's no such evidence whatsoever. Indeed, the evidence is to the contrary.
Well, see, what I'm having problems with is in the Coleman report, she does refer to evidence that was before her, these three experts and their conclusions, and then she reaches some conclusions of her own, talking about the pattern of the Mekahuqta's history, the nature of this village, and the department has a different interpretation of their relationship to the Bidwells than you do,
I think the problem there, Your Honor, exactly. Is in the way Coleman wrote it, and it is that Coleman is writing about the historic events, the three buttes, the culture. Mm-hmm. But nowhere is there any description of tribal activity in those matters or any tribal cultural activity throughout the entire period.
Let me just understand what's happening here. And the government's brief is that the tribe has been recognized.
In 1939, at least.
It's been recognized.
Right.
All right. So now the question is, can it get this restored land? And part of the argument is that, well, the Beckham report doesn't even address that issue. It's just talking about the tribe. And the tribe has been recognized.
The Beckham report was not considered by the agencies. And Interior even concedes as much.
What the process is that the decision has been made they are a federally recognized tribe.
Right.
All right. Now the question is, are they entitled under the Restoration Act to use this land for gaming?
Right. And if the tribe is a tribe, as Beckham reports. And again, it wasn't reconciled with the other information. That's our complaint. It was not reviewed. It was not considered by the NIGC. It was rejected. If the tribe as a tribe occupied only the Bidwell Ranch lands, then the only land that can be restored to that tribe is the Bidwell Ranch itself.
And our court has made it clear that that is not correct.
I'm sorry?
Our court has made it clear that that is not correct.
Well, no, if you mean Roseville. In Roseville, there was a Restoration Act which said the secretary, I think said shall, or perhaps they amended it to may,
right,
take land into trust as reservation land for the tribe within
right.
a two-county area.
And there was a connection between right. the restoration of the tribe and the restoration of land. But here, I don't see any connection.
That's correct, Judge Randolph. In fact, this court in Roseville said that to the extent that the secretary is reviewing lands not acquired pursuant to Restoration Act, the presumptions, the court has no occasion to reach the issue of deference to the secretary's interpretation.
Now, otherwise, they could buy a plot with the Las Vegas developer's help in the middle of Los Angeles and stick a casino up there. I mean, there's no end to it.
That's the reason for the restored land requirement
right.
to this tribe. Now, again,
so the question is where the tribe, the land, what I'll call the rancheria, is now part of the University of San Diego or Southern California, and there's all kinds of development on it. So, it is not available. All right, and the question was, did Congress intend then that there could be no land, quote, restored by way of restitution?
The Scotts Valley Settlement was the foundation for the restoration of the tribe. That was executed in 1992, or 8 years after the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act became law. In the case of Roseville, the Auburn tribe carefully crafted in its restoration bill the very language that Judge Randolph just referred to.
I mean, it makes perfect sense. If you uh-huh. think about the history of the Indian, the tribal relations with the United States and with the states, say, if that land doesn't exist anymore, then, you know, there's nothing you can do about it. But there's an additional requirement which you haven't mentioned, which is that the tribe exercises governmental authority over the land. And I don't see any governmental authority over the 600-acre tract. I mean, there's a letter in there that says we posted a sign, we negotiated with the Highway Commission. Everything they did, it sounds to me like any landowner could do. But if the tribe traditionally had exercised governmental authority over a particular plot, then that excludes state jurisdiction. If that has happened. And if state jurisdiction is excluded, then maybe it makes sense that you don't have to get the governor's approval to put a casino up there. But if the tribe has never exercised governmental authority and there's no historic connection between the land that they bought and this, then it doesn't make, to me, it doesn't make any sense. There is a provision, I'm talking too much, but I just want to get there is a provision in the Gaming Act, which is the first exception, that talks about newly acquired lands. That's subsection A. For newly acquired lands, you have to get the governor's approval, right?
Correct.
Well, why isn't this newly acquired land?
If the land does not qualify for one of the other exceptions of Section 20 of IGRA, or IGRA as some people say, then there is a provision for tribes to acquire off-reservation land, which this is, by the way, off-reservation land.
But they never had a reservation.
And with governor approval, and it's actually they call it the two-part determination, the secretary has to first determine that this acquisition of this land is in the tribe's best interest, and secondly, not detrimental to the surrounding community. And then the governor must concur, or the governor can veto. That is a process which is available for off-reservation acquisition. But that is admittedly land which does not qualify, otherwise qualify for gaming to a tribe. In this case, the tribe is attempting to assert it is the historic tribe that occupied that valley out there somewhere, but there's no evidence of any substantial connections at all or historic connections between the modern tribe and that piece of land.
Does the Beckham report get into the connection question?
The Beckham report demonstrates that there was no tribe prior to 1939.
So therefore there can't be any connection, right?
So there can't be a connection. Right. If there's not a connection between the historic tribe and the modern tribe, then the historic tribe's lands cannot qualify as restored to the modern tribe. And let me add, I realize I'm way over my time, but Dr. Beckham documents that the ranch was controlled by the Bidwells. The Bidwells decided who could live there, and indeed the census in the 1928 census was the representative people from eight different tribes, including one from the Sioux Nation in South Dakota, Hawaiians, African Americans, and whites living on the reservation, working as employees of the Bidwells. That was a condition of their ability to reside there, so that there was no tribal governance decision as to who was there. And the briefs all
say
the tribe has a right to.
Isn't a rancheria a place for workers to live?
That's just because I work on the court doesn't mean I'm sorry? Just because I work for the court doesn't mean I'm not a woman. You know, I mean, those two don't necessarily follow. But what I want to know is the Coleman report talks about the relationship of this tribe to this area in the what I'm calling Chico County.
Well, she talks about the relationship of the historic tribe to this area. All of the Coleman data refers of the history of the tribe.
That's why
is ancient history.
I know, and government says, well, government doesn't make the type of distinction you're making between tribes. And your response, as I understand it, is, but it makes a significance in terms of the restoration of lands. So that's why I'm back to the Coleman report. And she's saying this recognized tribe has a relationship to this region. And she talks about it here. Now, you may not agree, and Professor Braxton, may not agree, but she cites both the Merriam's field notes, she cites the Bibby. In other words, I mean, she's not making this up out of whole cloth. You may not agree and suggest that these are controversial issues, but it's not as though the government didn't address this issue, is what I'm trying
to say. That's the reason why the failure to resolve the factual issues, factual disputes raised by the Beckham report should have been considered, because Beckham went to where Bibby, the historian Bates, and Coleman did not go, which was the 20th century and who was at the Bidwell Ranch and was there a tribe. And he concluded that it was a disparate group of people from a lot of different backgrounds, and there was no tribal entity. And indeed, every administrative decision, including where they could live and who, and was made by the Bidwells.
I thought they did make reference to the Beckham report. They just thought that it was going to an issue that wasn't before them, and that's recognition of tribal status. It's not as if they didn't say anything about Beckham. They just thought it was irrelevant to the question before them of connection.
To answer that, Your Honor, the NIGC makes no bones about it. They said, we discarded it. We didn't consider it. Therefore, it wasn't part of the administrative record.
They've said that. Four.
I'm sorry?
The letter is on page 554. We're not inclined to revisit this decision?
Oh, the Skabeen letter?
Skabeen.
And what Skabeen says is, we're not inclined to revisit it. At the same time, the comments to the environmental impact statement were written.
To revisit what? We're not inclined to revisit what?
The
tribal status.
The Coleman land determination.
Okay.
He said, we're not going to revisit it because we already concurred in it in 2003. Well, that was before government documents were cited by Beckham disproving the predicate. Now, in addition, at the same time.
Okay, let us hear from Appalese here, and then we'll give you some time, all right?
I'm sorry?
Let us hear from Appalese, and then we'll give you some time
okay.
to respond.
Thank you, Your Honor.
morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Robert Stockman, here on behalf of the federal appellees. The agencies reasonably concluded that this would be a restoration of lands under IGRA, and there is ample evidence in the administrative record establishing that this tribe has a connection to this parcel. They looked first to the historical region occupied by the Mechoopda tribe and other Northwestern Valley Mayu, and as they've essentially conceded that this tribe had a historical...
Is this 600 some acres Indian country?
It will be once it is taken into trust.
Is it now?
No, but the agencies acknowledged that when they were in their decision-making process.
Did the tribe exercise governmental authority if they buy land with the help of a Las Vegas developer? And how is it that the tribe can exercise governmental authority over that?
Well, the restoration of lands opinion is built on the assumption if the land is taken into trust. So they will exercise governmental authority as soon as it is taken into trust. Now, they've exercised governmental authority to the extent they can as a private owner, but we have to do this in some sort of order. We have to decide whether or not to take it into trust, which in part depends on whether it would be a restoration of lands, and then the ability to exercise governmental authority will ride on whether or not they took it into trust.
On what basis did the Department of Interior or the Gaming Commission refused to even consider the Beckham report?
I think this is really helpful to look at as it happened. They submit a letter to the secretary requesting that the secretary reconsider and reject the land's opinion. They attach the Beckham report. They don't submit anything to NIGC but a courtesy copy of the correspondence with the secretary. At that time, the land's decision was 3 years old. The gaming ordinance at issue hadn't been filed. There was no application. There was no ongoing administrative process. They receive a courtesy copy of correspondence with another agency requesting action by the other agency. It is completely reasonable for an agency not to reopen a prior process when they're not even requested to do so. Parties have an obligation
The agency understood that they were being asked to reconsider that decision in light of the Beckham report. Otherwise, the letter that is on 554 of the Joint Appendix makes no sense.
The secretary did, and the secretary did reconsider. The National Indian Gaming Commission didn't understand that because no request was made. So the secretary did respond, and the secretary responded first at 554 and then responded again at 560 to 561, which is the NEPA comments. And there it's a more thorough response. They say, this is beyond NEPA. We aren't inclined to revisit. Moreover, the report says there's no tribe. And they respond, we don't have authority to revisit whether or not this is a recognized tribe. Under the Federally Recognized Indian Tribe List Act, we cannot terminate a tribe.
Yeah, but whether the land qualifies to be taken into trust is not the Gaming Commission's jurisdiction, is it?
No, and this is why the secretary was responding, Your Honor. Yeah. So the secretary has to make the – but I want to emphasize, the land's decision was originally analyzed by the Gaming Commission. And then the secretary concurred in it. So it is a product of both agencies. I mean, they both were involved in that process.
The timing question intrigues me. We have informal adjudication here. There are no rules that the secretary had to follow or anything in making a judgment. But on the other hand, the sequence of events that occurs, as developed by the council for the county, is we're talking about a 7-year period over which. Maybe there was a decision made by an acting general counsel in 2003, but if new information comes in before any kind of final decision, why isn't the secretary obligated to take that into account?
Well, the secretary did look at the information, and they rejected it. They said, this is going to whether it's a tribe. And then they go on to say, we first recognized this tribe in 1851, which rejects the conclusion of the Beckham report. So the secretary did consider this. Now, further, with timing, Butte County was, to my knowledge, and I don't have the record site at the moment, aware that this parcel was at issue in 2002. They produced this letter that says it will allow them to return and have a connection to their historic lands in 2002. And the secretary first put out notice about the NEPA process in 2004. So it's not as though Butte County had no idea this process was ongoing up until 2006. But the secretary did consider this. And it's true, it's not perhaps, it's a concise response.
Where is it that in the letter at 554 that supports the proposition that you're saying that they did review it?
review the Beckham report?
There are two responses. The second response is that's what supports it, and that's at 561.
That's a NEPA. That's in the context.
But they considered the report. I mean, NEPA.
I'm talking about on 554, which is strikes me as final agency action, at least. Maybe it is. I don't know. But on 554, there's no indication of that, is there?
I think that the NEPA comments that came out shortly thereafter reflect that.
That's not my question.
No, it is not on. This analysis is not at 554, but the analysis was done by the.
Let me ask the question again and get an answer. On 554, in the letter rejecting and refusing to reconsider, there's no indication at all that the secretary ever considered the Beckham report.
I think the fact that they declined to revisit reflects consideration. They go into greater length. I mean, they thought about it, and they declined to revisit. If the Beckham report had actually gone to the issue at hand, we don't know what the secretary would have done.
There's none of that in here on 554, right?
It's not at 554. It is at 561, which shortly followed, which is part of the NEPA process, which is part of the administrative process for the decisions at issue in this case. This case is about the decision to take the land into trust and about the gaming ordinance, and this is all part of the administrative record. They considered it. The secretary considered it as part of this administrative record, and they responded. Moreover, the importance of response is solely important to the extent it shows a failure to consider a relevant factor. And the relevant factor here is the historical connection, what the agencies spent a great deal of time considering, and there is evidence of a historical connection. Over the period Butte County is particularly pointing to, Ann Curie talks about the adapting and evolving Machupta tribe on the Chico Ranch area, what was then the Machupta Indian Village, which is at 193 to 198. But the record fully establishes that the Machupta relocated and formed the Machupta Indian Village. That's at 288, that's Bibby, and 188 and 189, that's Curie. Then they incorporated survivors from other Northwest Valley Maidu tribes and other Machupta tribes. That's at 260 and 206. Then they adapted and evolved, and then it was taken into trust. This is a continuous existence. And Beckham reaches a number of conclusions about there being no tribe. But his actual documents show that this tribe did consist of Machupta. I mean, at 498 to 500, he talks about who is part of the tribe. And he identifies Machupta members. He identifies Northwest Valley Maidu members. And he does identify other groups as well. But this is a tribal, I mean, this is a distinct tribal community. And one other issue is we don't require tribes to show a greater structure than they had going into the process. I mean, one thing Beckham points to is a failure to hold elections. But historically, the Machupta didn't hold elections.
Do you agree that the restoration of land has to be in connection with the restoration of federal recognition of tribal status?
There has to be a connection, Your Honor, but we think the test achieves that. And they're not challenging the test. We look to the factual circumstances of the acquisition and the timing. And the reality is we did reject a prior application because because there wasn't the necessary historical connection. So we need to give tribes time to go through the administrative process. And this tribe endeavored to do exactly that.
Do you agree that it's not enough for the restoration of lands that the tribe at one time occupied those lands?
We need to show a historical nexus, and it's very dependent, as all things involving different tribes are, on the history of the tribe. Here, there's a strong historical nexus.
Do you agree with the legal proposition that just because a tribe occupied particular lands in the past, that's not sufficient to entitle them to restoration of those lands?
It is not always sufficient, Your Honor. It can be evidence that builds the historical nexus. Here, the tribe's mythology also is linked to this land. They used it historically.
Didn't the Gaming Commission in the Lake Traverse case say that it's not sufficient? Occupancy in the past is not sufficient?
I'll give you an example of a case where it wasn't sufficient. The Wyandotte, yes, they did, because it's not always sufficient. But it's important to keep in mind the varied histories of tribes.
No, it's not always sufficient. That means it might be sufficient sometimes. The Lake Traverse opinion of the Gaming Commission said it's not sufficient.
And here the Gaming Commission found that the evidence was sufficient. This tribe lived in the region. They used this parcel. Trails running between this tribe and other villages go through it. Central events in their mythology occurred immediately next to it. It's within 12 miles of the rancheria. There's a nexus. I mean, this is sufficient. There are tribes with less connection that where we found it, and there are tribes with less connection.
Maybe you were wrong. Is there any evidence that this tribe ever exercised any governmental authority over any of this land?
The agency wrestled with exactly the difficulty of trying to apply these concepts to the Maidu, where they would have an area that was shared between different tribes. And we determined that this was enough. We determined that they exercised authority as much as it was between, it was in the Machuta territory. They used it, they utilized it. Now, it's true, other Northwest Valley Maidu tribes, which in fact have now merged with this tribe, also utilize this land. But we wrestled with this exact issue. And the difficulty is you can't expect ownership in the sense of, you know, you can't, we aren't going to apply the requirements as though they had a European legal system. I mean, they exercised authority to the extent they could.
The problem with applying that kind of a test to countless other tribes in the United States.
They did exercise authority over this parcel, though, as much as
the Navajos and the Sioux and, you know, on and on and on. California tribes are kind of different, but anyway.
As much as any, they in our view, we considered the history. We wrestled with the issue of, is this their land or otherwise? Bibby talked about how it's every man's land, it's no man's land, but this is within the area utilized by this tribal community and the other tribes which merge with it. And the agency found that was sufficient to establish a historic connection. And I quite simply am aware of no precedent that shows that that is arbitrary and capricious. With that, if there are any further...
Yeah, I just want to be clear on a couple of things. One, the record shows that Butte County had notice back in 2002, and then when that letter from what council described as a politician came to the department. But that politician was a member of the county board of commissioners or supervisors. Then the NEPA notice went out in 2004. When the letter came in 2006, we have the response in August from Mr. Skibine, and then we have the other comments during the NEPA process. I guess I just need to understand what the process is. I'm speculating here that the county finally decided to spend some money and hire somebody to do a study for them, and that by the time the professor finished the study, a couple of years had passed, so the report wasn't available until 2006. When the Skibine says we're not inclined to reconsider because the Office of Solicitor reviewed the matter and concurred in the commission's determination, that's not a final action in any sense, is it, by the agency?
I think of it more as a response to the submission. I don't know that it's a final action.
What I'm trying to understand is that if you have what you think is relevant information and you send it to the secretary, and the secretary says we're not inclined to reconsider it, what can you do? You just have to wait for the NEPA process to be completed and the final decisions, and then you come into court as they have come in here?
I think this is probably the way to pursue the suit, Your
Honor. The final agency action in this case did not occur until March 2008, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that was accompanied by publication in the Federal Register for the purpose of allowing any interested party to file for judicial review, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So the final agency action doesn't occur until 2 years after the secretary rejected the Beckham submission.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's why I'm trying to be clear in my own mind. Mr. Skibine says we're not going to reconsider the Coleman analysis. Is that, tell me if I'm wrong here. We're not going to reconsider the Coleman analysis. But then in connection with what I'm calling the restoration of land decision, we are looking at the Beckham report. And we do so in the process of looking at, in the environmental assessment.
I think they considered the submission sufficiently to determine they weren't going to reopen the entire restoration of lands process. So they did consider it and decided it was insufficient to rebut what had already been presented.
Well, you can't tell, really. I mean, I think that's reasonable, too. They didn't say they threw it out because it was 2 years late.
They did not throw it out.
That we're not going to reconsider. And the implication is we looked at it and we didn't think there was anything in it that would cause us to want to reconsider.
Yes, Your Honor. That's
but then in the NEPA process, they do address the report in the sense of saying that Professor Beckham has raised a lot of questions about the tribe, but that's not what we're addressing now.
Yes, and I think that that is fairly attributable that that is the reason they didn't revisit. And they say, we don't revisit, and they say, because he's challenging tribal recognition, and we don't have authority to revisit that.
And as I understand, part of petitioner's argument is, in one sense, you can read the Beckham report that way, saying that the modern tribe has no connection to the ancient tribe.
I don't know that you can read. I've read the Beckham report several times. I don't know that it can be read that way.
I'm trying to, the way the petition.
Oh, sorry. Yes, I think their position is that, yes.
All right, and that, therefore, even if you're a recognized tribe, you have no connection to this land. And that's what the Beckham report is trying to show in another way.
It may be what they meant to show.
So all I'm trying to understand is, petitioner's point is it's relevant evidence. It may not, from the department's point of view, be dispositive or determinative because the department had all this other evidence it could consider. See what I'm trying to understand?
I see what you're trying to say. I think one of the
In other words, this is being put to the court as though a report comes in, it's identified as relevant to an ongoing decision that the department has yet to make. The department throws it in the trash basket and says, not going to consider it at all. And the record doesn't suggest that. It does suggest they didn't agree with the implication of the Beckham report, but at least the environmental assessment says they dealt with it on the merits of it.
I think they did at least consider the merits of it and conclude that it didn't change their analysis because it went to tribal recognition and they went on to say, and we think that we recognize this tribe in 1851, which kind of undermines the entire theory of the Beckham report.
Where's the NEPA document that you referred to?
I believe it's 560 to 561. It's just the comments from that NEPA process. We didn't include.
Who prepared those?
I apologize, Your Honor. I'm not sure who prepared those statements.
Because NEPA documents are generally not decision-making documents. They are simply gathering information that gets presented to the decision-maker to see whether the decision-maker wants to change his or her mind.
The final decision here is the trust acquisition. And
well, I understand that, but I don't know how you can rely on a NEPA document to say that this was a secretary's this reflected the secretary's thinking about the relevance of the Beckham report.
With respect to documents produced in the administrative process are one of the ways that agencies, or my understanding is one of the ways the agencies respond to comments and submissions by parties, and not everything has to be signed by the secretary. That's what we were trying to do.
When I was dealing with things like this, including NEPA reports and things like that, I remember seeing in the Washington Post a one ad when people were being hired to the government, and the one ad said NEPA writers needed only requirement college English.
Well, the NEPA document reflects the agency's process and reflects the response of the agency to this submission, and
Process, that's for sure.
We didn't break it into a separate agency action. It's part of this administrative process, and that was how the agency responded. And NEPA documents are part of that. The comment, the response process is part of showing how the agency has responded to what the public has sent us.
I'm not really clear about the organizational structure here and the division of jurisdiction between the Gaming Commission and the Department of the Interior. On the question whether a particular parcel of land qualifies for exemption under the subsection B of the section we're talking about, who is the final decision maker there?
It's My understanding is it's quite complicated, and there have been several memoranda of understanding as to this. In this case, my understanding is both agencies considered it and signed off on the decision. In part because the opinion, because it was relied on by both agencies in separate administrative processes. So they both kind of adopted the position.
Are those memorandum of understanding, are they published anywhere?
Yes, they are published.
They're in the Federal Register? Is that where they are?
Oh, I'm not sure if they're in the Federal Register.
They're on the Department of the Interior website?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And was the Coleman report ever circulated publicly?
The Coleman report was not circulated publicly. There's no requirement for public notice and comment in this process.
Yeah, I understand that.
And it wasn't circulated publicly.
It was not put on a website or anything?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor.
Okay.
If there are...
Anything further, since we've asked a lot of questions?
I think I've...
Fine.
Thank you very much.
All right. Counsel for... Appley, the tribe.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'm Nicholas Yost on behalf of the tribe, and I will, in what I say, try to respond to several of the issues that members of the court have raised. Judge Griffith, I think, accurately stated that this is a substantial evidence case. That the land in question, and this also responds to some of the concerns that you had, Judge Randolph, that the land in question was part of the land base promised to the tribe by the 1851 treaty. It is within the boundaries contained by the 23 Machupta villages. It's in an area historically occupied.
Was there a tribe from 1851?
Yes, there definitely was, and there are the Biddy, Bates, the archaeologists' report in the administrative record. But perhaps most important is Ann Curry's study done for the California Historical Society 50 years ago, so unconnected with the parties in this case, in which she really sets out in considerable detail the history of the tribe all during that period.
The proposed 1851 treaty, was that only between this particular tribe and the federal government?
There were a total of 18 treaties entered into in 51, and one of those was that which was signed by the Michupta tribe with one of three Indian commissioners sent out by the federal government to California in 1851 for that purpose, and who then arrived escorted by the U.S. Army for formal negotiations, which are described in our brief, which resulted in that treaty. It is within 10 miles of the former rancheria, and we're talking, 3 hours walk. I mean, this is not the situation
Is the standard under this connection, did the agency need to find that the tribe was continuously operated as a tribe with some sort of form of government, some sorts of self-recognition as a tribe, or does it just need to find that there were descendants of the original tribe living in this area?
Well, I think Judge Rogers got to the heart of that in saying that once recognized in the treaty discussions in 1851, it continues until there is a termination. In this case, there was a termination in 67 and then a restoration in the 1990s, but that was continuous. However, sort of statement of law, there were, as appear in the Curry study, a continuing the tribe continued in this general area during that entire period.
Why wasn't the 1851 treaty ratified?
From what is shown in the administrative record, The treaties were negotiated by the commissioners, and were sent to the Senate to be ratified. At about that time, and we're talking the gold rush, the California legislature then discovered, oh, there's gold on that land. We don't want to give it to the Indians. And they petitioned the California delegation in Congress to block the treaties. The treaties were literally, the phrase used is, were secreted and were not uncovered until clerks came across them in 1905, after which the United States began a process of the creation of the rancherias, of trying to find land and begin to undo some of the wrongs that had taken place.
1905, I thought the rancheria was owned by the Bidwells then.
The rancheria was on land owned by the Bidwells. Annie Bidwell...
Did they get it through the Desert Lands Act? Is that how they acquired the property? Was it originally federal property?
No,
it had to be originally federal.
Well, Mr. Bidwell acquired the land in 1840 before it became a state, and I believe just sort of a standard commercial transaction. Mrs. Bidwell then provided her will for the land to go to those who would hold it in trust for...
When was the Desert Lands Act passed?
I don't know, Your Honor. This is not in the desert.
The two main ways that land was acquired, the Desert Lands Act and the Homestead Act. The Homestead Act was later. But
Mrs. Bidwell gave it to those to hold in trust for the tribe. They then were working with the United, and then the Superior Court appointed a trustee under California law who worked with the federal government to acquire the necessary funds to clear the taxes to take the land into trust federally, which was done. So then in 1939, all that happened was the land was acquired by the federal government in trust for the tribe, and it could not have done so had there not been a recognized tribe for them to do it. That was not, however, the occasion of any recognition.
First, the tribe was first.
It says General Bidwell purchased from William Dickey a Mexican land grant of more than 22,000 acres. Mm-hmm. That's in the Coleman report.
Yeah. The first official federal recognition of this tribe was when?
1851, Your Honor.
No, it's an unexecuted treaty is official recognition by one Indian commissioner? I don't think so. What's the relevance of 1939?
Your Honor, most respectfully, the criteria used by the Interior Department, which are quoted in our brief, include a treaty, and I don't remember the exact word, but it's like treaty discussions and other actions by the federal government deals with on a government-to-government basis with the tribe, which they did, whether or not that treaty was later ratified.
What happened in 1939?
In 1939 was simply the transfer from the trustee appointed by the California Superior Court to the United States, which had said, we have up to $3,000, which we can use for this. The United States, the BIA, wrote the state trustee, said, now we've got the money, it's been appropriated, and we can...
In connection with the Indian Reorganization Act, which was, what, 1934?
That's correct.
Did the Department of the Interior publish a list of federally recognized tribes?
I don't know whether they did at that time.
Do you know whether this tribe was on that list? I know
that after restoration, it was on the list, but there had to be a recognized tribe to restore prior to, in order to be on the list at that time.
There's later legislation requiring the publication of the list, isn't there? What is
it? Yes.
What is the 1992?
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. And the tribe is on that. I will also just picking up further on evidence of that goes to the relationship of this tribe to the land. It's near buttes, which are of great historic and religious significance to the tribe. It's on the site of a trail linking the Machupta and other Maidu villages. Judge Randolph expressed the concern that land could be taken into trust anywhere.
If the test is this a restitution, then if that's the test, then you can take land. You can,
of course, Your Honor. You are right, and that's not this case. As the NIGC found in the Wyandotte case, where 175 miles away, the tribe had in the prior century moved through this area, but had no other connection. And I might conclude, Your Honors.
What's the name of that case that you just cited?
The Wyandotte case.
All right, thank you.
Which is cited in actually the briefs of all the parties.
Right, thank you.
In the mythology of the Machupta tribe, the tribe was lost in a gambling game and then won back again. And to quote from the joint appendix at page 282, every tribe was restored to its old original place, and every village to its place on the face of the earth, and there was no confusion. The Machupta tribe asks that it be restored to this small portion.
You know, I have a question that I meant to ask the attorney for the Department of the Interior. I'll ask you, maybe you know the answer. The case that the Supreme Court decided last term.
Cartieri.
Right. I can't pronounce it, but thank you.
Everybody mispronounces it.
Right. But I looked at how that case came up to the through the courts, and it was analogous to this case. I mean, it was a question of, you know, taking land back in trust and so on and so forth. But the opposition to the Narragansett tribe was put before, there was an administrative appeal before the Interior Board of Indian Appeals that adjudicated the question, sort of some of the questions that we're hearing here today about whether proper to take it into trust is restored land and everything. And then it goes to the courts. Are you aware, are there any Interior Department regulations requiring exhaustion of that administrative remedy?
I am generally aware of that, and it is actually an alternative remedy. Either a decision is made by the assistant secretary, him or herself, or the decision, if made by a regional office, then can go to the Interior Board of Indian Appeals.
If the assistant secretary makes a decision, as happened here, assistant secretary for Indian Affairs, is there a requirement that that decision, before you go into court, that decision has to go up through the Interior Board of Indian Appeals?
No. When the assistant secretary makes it, as distinguished from the subordinate official making that decision, it does not go to the appeals board.
I see. So the case in the Supreme Court that was only a regional office made that?
Your Honor, I'm familiar with the holding of Cartieri. I'm not familiar with the procedures by which it got there.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Can I ask Interior Department lawyer before, is that your understanding that Mr. Stockman just gave? Is that a correct?
That's my understanding of that process, Your Honor.
Okay.
Mr. Yost, yeah.
I could answer a question that Mr. Yost was unable to from Judge Randolph. There was a list of federally recognized tribes published by the Department of the Interior in 1946. It's not on the record, but it's a document that we could certainly furnish. It was written by a man named Haas, and it was entitled 10 Years Under the IRA, and it was an assessment of the IRA and what was going on. And it listed all of the tribes that were recognized. Machupta was not among them. That was in 1946, to answer that question. So there was a list. Now, I have to say one thing quickly. Mr. Stockman said something that he said in his brief. He said the village was relocated to the Bidwell Ranch. Well, that's not quite what the sources that he cites say.
That's what the Coleman report says, citing experts. And you may disagree with the conclusion, but the question was, as Judge Griffith said many moons ago, what we're dealing with is arbitrary and capricious and substantial evidence.
Well, Coleman cites the same material in as authority for her statement.
Apparently drew different inferences.
The point is, Your Honor, with due respect, the Coleman report and the material otherwise cited, which, by the way, includes Coleman in the Stockman citation, says that the village was established by the Bidwells for their employees. And,
well, you know, we can go through the record, and I can point to you how that's explained, et cetera. I don't think that gets you anywhere. The question we're dealing with is really a procedural one here.
I think it's a little bit of parsing, though, on the part of the arguer, because it's no statement in the cited materials says that the village was, that the tribe relocated. It's that the Bidwells created a village that for their employees. And that is, by the way, affirmatively alleged by the tribe in its Scotts Valley complaint. But the tribe did something else that's very important. And my memory was jogged by a little bit by some of the questions that you asked of the other side. In the amended complaint in Scotts Valley, the tribe pleaded at paragraph 4, which is at JA 562, that it had been federally recognized from 1939 until June 2, 1967.
And we got into that issue about where does the clause at least, does it apply to each subsection? I mean, that's where we are on that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, those dates were omitted, though, in the Coleman letter and in the response to the EA.
I don't understand your argument about the continuous existence of the tribe.
About what? I'm sorry?
The continuous existence of the tribe. I mean, first of all, you say that we're not questioning federal recognition, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So why does it matter?
If the historic tribe is not the predecessor as a matter of tribal history to the modern tribe, then the lands of the historic tribe cannot be claimed as restored land to the modern tribe. And indeed, the historic tribe's connection to the land, as Mr. Yeo said, is exactly the foundation for the...
This is part and parcel of your argument that the restored lands don't have any connection to the restored tribe.
That's correct, Your Honor.
When do you say the modern tribe came into existence then?
Well, we say 1939 was the earliest because that's when the land was taken into trust, not for a tribe, but for the Indians of the Machupta village. I might add, though, to something Judge Randolph
said. 1939 is when the modern tribe rose like a phoenix out of the ashes.
Relationship. That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
But there's one thing that's important, and it goes to some of Judge Randolph's questions. The law is established, and indeed it's articulated by Coleman, the NIGC, that there must have been, and let me get the exact words here, that there must have been a substantial and continuing relationship between the tribe and the land throughout its history for this land to today qualify. And that comes from Grand Traverse, Your Honor. So that in this instance, there's no evidence on the record to support that.
I was trying to remember. I appreciate your bringing it up, because it's not just the tribe at one point in the past occupied the particular land or used it as a place to walk through. It's that other requirement, right?
And that's what the courts have said.
Are those buttes still there?
I'm sorry?
Those buttes, are they still there?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I have a hearing problem.
Never mind. I think we've exhausted this. We will take the case under advisement. Thank you very much,
all
counsel.
Everything's moved over to his stuff. He has it.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.